So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Hi there. Hi there, and welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. As you can tell, Andy Kaufman is here, sort of. And Jerry Lawler is also here. And there's some nights I wish Tom were here. But that's not the case. Is Andy, are you coming in here again, or...
I am sick of this bullshit. You are full of bullshit, my friend. I will sue you for everything you have. I will sue your ass. You're a motherfucking asshole. As far as I'm concerned, you hear me? A fucking asshole. Fuck you. I will get you for this. I am sorry to use those words on television. I apologize to all my fans. I'm sorry. But you're a fucking asshole.
I think you can use some of those words on TV. I'm not. But what you can't do is throw coffee. I've said it over and over again. Well, that about wraps this segment up. I want to thank my guests, Mr. Lawler. Jerry, thank you very much for being here, and good luck to you, sir. And my thanks to Andy Kaufman.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Pollock, and his name is Wei Ting.
It's my name.
Wei, how's your day?
Pretty okay.
Pretty okay. So yeah, not
that,
ugly
that,
okay.
That all rhymes.
It's pretty okay.
Yeah, that all rhymed.
Oh.
Did you get that?
Yeah, yeah. You could audition for Tough Enough with a promo like that.
Sure.
How are you doing?
Doing pretty good, man.
You're wearing your uniform?
Yeah, I am. You always love to talk about what I'm wearing. What are you wearing?
I'm wearing a blue... It's two colors of blue, actually. I think one you could say is almost a turquoise to it. Kind of. I think if you were to meld these colors together, you would get a kind of a turquoise kind of look.
Okay, well, it's almost a sort of a check, sort of a plaidy, sort of a stripy type of dress shirt.
Yep.
And... blue jeans.
What do you prefer? What looks better? Do you like the pattern, or do you think solids are better?
Pattern's nice.
Yeah.
Pattern's nice. Yeah. Can't really comment much. It's fine.
What do you think about when I wear a tie?
I think it's cool. I think you could switch up maybe your knot.
Uh-huh.
You know? Try a Pratt knot.
A Pratt knot?
Yeah, try that.
Oh, okay. Is that named after the actor?
No. It's some other dude named Pratt.
Okay.
Who created it.
What about a Windsor knot?
I don't know.
Do you know how to tie a Pratt knot?
No, I usually have to look it up. I never tie ties enough to internalize it. But, I mean, they're kind of better for skinny dudes like you and I.
Okay. Yeah. A Pratt tie.
Pratt knot.
Pratt knot.
Yeah, if you guys have suggestions, everybody out there, if you're a tie expert, any of you, maybe one of you works at Moore's and can offer a suggestion to John.
Yes.
Or,
I went to Moore's recently.
Tip top tailors.
I had to get fitted for a suit. I'm going to be a best man at a wedding in July. So I had to go get fitted for my suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down. And she asked me for my name. And then she smirked. And she said, "Are you related to Jackson Pollock?" And I said, "Ha ha, I've never heard that one before." And her smile disappeared. And she just looked down. And she's like, "I'm sorry." I'm just trying to tell a joke. You didn't have to get so serious here, ma'am.
That's like an interaction I have like every 2 weeks. I have one of those.
You say something. Well, you have a very dry delivery, and it's hard to decipher at times.
It's just more because of my name. But anyway,
What did some? What kind of responses do you get to your name?
It's just like,
give us my paint what, the picture.
Okay, so
where are
I'll
you?
Be like, you know, maybe like renting a car, and then the person will be like, "Oh, can I please have your name, sir?" And I'll be like, "Yep, my first name's Wei, W-A-I," and they'll be like, "No way, get it? Yeah, no way." Like, they don't even really pick up on... I tell them my last name is Ting. So they don't really even pick up on Wei Ting. Like, they don't even pick up that. That is, like, you know, even a bigger joke. But it's just more so the way they have fun with. And it's hilarious. It's so funny. It's so funny.
Next time you should just deadpan and be, "I've been on this earth for 31 years. Each one of those years has had a minimum of 365 days attached to them. Every single day, I have woken up with this name. Multiple times in a day, I have had to give my name to people. And they have had to react in only a small variation of ways. How many times do you think I have heard your silly attempt at humor, you piece of shit?" And then you should just walk away with the keys without even giving them a credit card and steal that rental car.
That would be quite the reaction.
Like, imagine you just never smiled when you interacted with people anymore. And you were just down to business. And their attempt at humor would just fall so flat that they would go home that day. And when they're asked how their day went, they'd be like, "There was this one guy. I was just trying to make a joke." See, that's the funny part. You're giving us your side of the story about your name, and I'm on your side. I think it would be horrendous to have to hear the same shit every day about my name. But that guy, he's going to go home, and when someone asks him about his day, mm-hmm. he's going to talk about this guy with no sense of humor that couldn't even take a joke. So it's like this one-sided view of a conflict.
True.
I just think we have to look at both sides here.
See, like, if I met you, if I didn't know you and I heard your name, John Pollock, I would never make that joke. Are you related to Jackson Pollock?
I don't mind that. I've heard that very few times, actually, in my life. Less than five.
It's not even, you know, if it was only...
Yes, my last name, it has been shared by someone in history. You're right. You're right. Imagine if my name was Smith, the conversation we would have. All the Smiths we could talk about. If my last name was Kennedy. Oh, like the former president? Yes. Yes. He was my mother.
Yeah. Yeah, people should just not talk.
Imagine if you could only... this goes back to an old theory of mine. The old buy a car, you only get like 10 honks in the life of a car. Imagine you could only
was
get
that
out...
a theory of yours?
Like, you buy a car... And this car, you will get 30 honks throughout the... And then the thing doesn't work anymore. So you better use them very, very judiciously.
Okay.
Because just ramming the honker, that's fine. You can go nuts in traffic one Friday afternoon. But the next time a Mack truck is pulling up and doesn't see you behind and I'm going, uh-oh. Uh-oh, that time I was in traffic, I used 29 of them, and then this morning I hit 30, and now I'm going to get run over by a Mack truck backing up.
Well, this is based on the assumption that people only honk, you know, unnecessarily.
Most do, Wei. Most do.
I would tend to agree, but I mean, what if you lived in a poor trafficked area? Like, what if you... this is not even to, you know...
Go offend.
This
it's
is
fine.
Not... I don't mean...
It's Wednesday.
It's... I don't mean to add to the stereotype, but the traffic in Shanghai, for instance, is atrocious. There's just it's atrocious. I can't explain it. There are no rules. It's just chaos. What if you were like in Shanghai and you had to honk? You just simply had to honk. You had to do it.
Verbalize it. Roll down that window. It's more personal.
I don't know if
like a honk can be interpreted so many different ways. Typically, you just it's fuck you. That's what you're hearing when someone honks at you, and you immediately get defensive. Your reaction is not uh-oh, what am I doing wrong? It's this motherfucker. It creates more.
No.
That sound.
No,
it is. it is the definition of just anger-inducing. That's what a honk is interpreted by many
it's
to be.
It's to alert you. It's to alert you that something is wrong. Something is wrong here. And look around you. Sense what is wrong and fix it before the wrong gets even worse.
I remember once crossing the street, and a guy started honking at me for no reason. And I look up and
there
I gave him—
There was probably a reason.
Well, I gave the person the finger, and then I saw it was our old camera fellow, Ben Jonah. And I was like, okay, ha ha ha, you're honking at me like you're pretending to be mad at you, but I am mad at you now.
There actually was no reason.
No, there was no reason. It was,
he just wanted to say
I'm in
hi.
A car, and you're out there, and we're going to play a game with everybody watching. Huh? Yeah. Great. Great waste of my time. So, you know, easily irritable. That's the way to go through life. Right? It's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to hear some comedy? I prepared something for you.
All right, let's hear it.
Do you know what's become my favorite?
We're in such a laughing mood today.
Yes. You know what's become my favorite pastime on the WWE Network?
I don't know.
It's not watching any of these shows.
Okay.
It has now been going back from years and years of Raw and SmackDown replays and reading the titles. The shows. Do you want to hear the 9 best titles I have found?
Wow, you made a top 9?
I did.
Why don't I just go top 10? Why'd you make 9?
You know, I wasn't planning to get 10, but then at the end when I closed my window, I realized I had 9 and I didn't want to go back. So here they are in no specific order, okay?
I thought this was a top. Okay, fine.
Okay, well, then I'm going to do them
in order.
I could probably do these in order. At number 9, we have the July 25th, 2004 edition of SmackDown entitled Former Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's the worst of the bunch I found.
This was what, 2009?
2014.
Oh, Former Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ah, get it.
Then we have another SmackDown a few weeks later, actually the very next week, entitled Don't Stop Believing.
Who's that for?
I believe it was Roman Reigns themed show from last August.
All right.
Last year, SmackDown took place on Halloween, and none of us realized that particular Friday saw the long-awaited return after 14 years of Halloween Havoc.
Okay.
Now we have some.
So what was the title?
Halloween Havoc.
Oh,
that was the name of the show. Okay, now we're going to get into the funny play on words. I can see you weren't impressed with those three. September 19th, 2014 SmackDown. From Russia with Reigns. The old James Bond movie, From Russia with Love.
I know. Okay. Well, why? Why? Was he fighting Rusev? Or?
I don't know the content of these shows.
All right.
I imagine there was something involving Rusev and Roman Reigns.
Okay.
Then we had, in November of 2013, we're going all the way back, Wyatt Family Matters, which was so good. That was the name of the episode on both November 7th and 18th of that year.
Wow.
They had a redo.
Really like that.
Wyatt Family Matters. Like, someone really loved that.
Loved Urkel.
Then we have October 14th, 2013, an episode of Raw, To Catch an Apex Predator.
Okay.
That's a little creepy, isn't it? To catch, to me, the apex predator, in 2015, what do you think of when you hear the word predator? Because to me, it's not a hockey team in Nashville.
Yeah, I think of
it's someone doing horrible things to minors.
Sure, yeah. I actually still think of the alien.
Alien versus predator?
Yeah, I still think of the Schwarzenegger movie.
Okay. Then we have the July 18th edition of SmackDown from last week, which this one was so stupid. It's 2 words. Dean Kane.
It's pretty good.
And finally, we had 2 more. We have Vegan Wears Prada, which was a Daniel Bryan show in August of 2013. And then the one you're going to love the most, this from September of 2013, when Daniel Bryan was just all the rage. Goat Face Killer.
Oh, awesome.
Someone out there is naming these episodes, and I've now found what would be the one job I would love to have in the WWE. I used to believe that there was absolutely no job I would want, but naming the – if they were just to freelance me and say, you name the episodes each week,
Well, why don't we hire you to do that for our shows? Why don't you just name every episode?
We should start naming Review
Raw. Start summarizing every episode of Raw in a funny title.
That is a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love that. We'll put that up on the descriptions.
Why didn't I think of this past Monday night?
What did they name this past Monday?
It's kind of funny how I did name this past Mondays out of all the weeks.
Oh, you did, right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like we had you came up with this and then we had this conversation. What a coincidence.
All right, well.
Great.
If I forget, if I don't.
They better be as good as this. I mean, I think you could do it.
Listen, if I top Dean Kane, I'll be very proud of myself.
Okay. Yeah.
What's so funny is that no one, before the network, like these shows were all being named.
Yeah,
and it's like it was probably just for the amusement of the writing staff
totally.
That they got their script and it's Wyatt Family Matters again.
I can't believe they would even post this publicly. It seems like an inside joke that they would never release because they're so protective of this stuff like this usually.
They don't name the NXT episodes. They just get numbered episodes.
They should really release scripts, you know? The Easter eggs? They should really release the scripts on the network. You can see the script.
Yeah, it'd be a great idea. I don't think that one's going to be happening anytime soon.
Why not?
Well, do you watch some of the pre- and post-show analysis in the WWE universe?
No,
I don't think they're ready to part with their scripts.
Yeah. But I feel like, they're now more than ever, I think there's a lot of curiosity in the production of these shows.
Oh, I'm not denying the curiosity. I'm just saying how much they plan to quench that thirst of their audience.
Would you buy, a WWE script book that came out with a book of published classic scripts from classic episodes of Raw? Is that something you'd buy?
No, because I think some of the best episodes would be ones where it's like three-page scripts of Steve Austin, 15-minute promo, Vince comes out, sets up Unforgiven main event, Dude Love Running. Mm. That would probably be your opening 20-minute segment.
Maybe worse episodes of Raw.
Okay, those maybe.
Like, imagine reading the
those would be great companion guides for our show.
Yeah. So there's an idea.
Okay. A whole, blocking of the Katie Vick scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful idea. All right. Are you ready to get into this week's review?
Yeah.
All right. This was the Jerry Lawler, It's Good to Be the King documentary, DVD, Blu-ray.
Not as good of a title.
You know what? He's actually improved his life over the past 12 years because in 2003, he released a book entitled It's Good to Be the King, ...
Hmm.
And now I've got to jump to the conclusion that it's good to be the king always.
Could he not come up with another title? This is he used the same one as this book?
I wonder how attached Jerry Lawler was to this project. You're coming to my house when and for how long? Oh, 3-hour documentary? No. I've got better stuff to do. My heart can not possibly withstand a 3-hour chat. We are going to do an hour and 20 on my career, which is my biggest complaint of this thing. An hour and 20 minutes this documentary was.
How long is the Triple H one? About the same, right? Wasn't it?
I can't remember.
Was the CM Punk one that?
Punk was like 2+ hours.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Jerry Lawler has had a storied career going back to 1970, 45 years worth.
I didn't have so much of a problem with the length. You're right. If you're an actual Lawler fan, I think you might have enjoyed a lot more. But I thought just as a sit-down one-time viewing, I thought the length was perfect, 90 minutes.
We're going to be joined by some guests on the show. Are you aware of this?
I did not know.
I was watching this, and in my head I was thinking, man, Jerry Lawler would be a great guy to interview. I would love to chat with this guy about his career. And didn't think twice about it. And then on Sunday, it dawned on me, I've interviewed this guy.
Oh, man.
Totally forgot about it. Mm-hmm. They do outline Lawler running for mayor in 1999. They don't mention that he ran again 10 years later in 2009. And me, under the guise of a campaign stop for Jerry Lawler, got him on Fight Network Radio, and I was filling in that day, so I did get to interview Jerry Lawler. I have not listened to this interview since I conducted it 6 years ago, but we're going to hear Jerry Lawler. I think even more entertaining. I'm sure I talked some wrestling about him, but the majority of the focus was why you should vote for me for mayor of Memphis and coming on a Toronto radio show to provide his stump speech. So I think this will be beyond great to listen to. And for those of you that want to hear some Jerry Lawler, I'm also going to air a brief portion of an interview we did recently, 2 years ago, with Lance Russell. the voice of Memphis Wrestling, who, going back and watching this, I got the 3-disc set of this. So I watched the documentary, and then I watched some of the extras. Lance Russell is one of the greatest broadcasters in wrestling history. The empty arena match, he is so great during this thing, as is Terry Funk. And Jerry Lawler, I mean, he was fine in it, but the stars of that were Lance Russell and Terry Funk.
That's on the collection?
Yeah, which they don't have a ton of Memphis stuff. They have the empty arena match with Terry Funk, a loser leaves town match with Bill Dundee.
Do they own that stuff now?
I believe they've worked out some kind of a deal, because the ownership of the Memphis Library is very much muddied, because in 96 they sold the promotion, and it was eventually put up for bankruptcy, and then you had this fractured ownership where there were certain parties that believed they owned it. Corey Macklin believed he owned the footage, which he then licensed out to us at the Fight Network. And now the WWE, I believe, has worked out some deal. So I don't know if they've licensed this or outright own it. But outside of that, they had the original Kaufman match, and then there's a match with Eddie Gilbert. And then the rest is all WWE, WWF footage on the discs. So I guess your overall impressions going into this. What did you think just of the style of this documentary?
Well, first of all, I mean, I have to comment that there was very little fanfare about this DVD coming out. I actually didn't even know it was released until you suggested that we review it. And so I certainly, out of all the documentaries that I've had seen them release recently, I feel like this one had the least amount of buzz. And so I didn't really have any expectations going into it. I think, you know, for a guy, he's certainly deserving of a documentary, of a DVD set. I mean, I'm surprised that it hadn't been created yet until now. I think I expected a lot about the Kaufman stuff, which we got a decent amount of. It's sort of tricky because, you know, while most people do know him in the WWE, it's really only just as a commentator. He's only really had a handful of, you know, significant matches, and it's, you know, you're basically relying on his Memphis career to you know, craft the entire wrestling portion of this DVD on. But nonetheless, he is a very important historical figure in the industry. And so I think I was just even interested to learn more about, you know, his entire career, because even as a fan who's seen his commentary work for years, I didn't even know a ton about his Memphis work.
They've never significantly leaned on his background pre-WWF. You know clearly the Memphis attachment, and that if you're a WWF fan, especially of the last 15 years, yeah, you know him as a broadcaster that was a wrestler, was big in Memphis, but I don't think they really hit home how significant a figure Jerry Lawler was.
Never.
And when you look at all aspects that he has worked in, whether it be promoting, announcing, in the ring, as a draw in Memphis every Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum. I mean, this is one of the best performers in the history of U.S. wrestling, in my opinion.
They've almost completely, you know, tried to shed that image away from him, you know, throughout the years and as a commentator. You know, never really taking him seriously as not until recently, I'd say, you know. But for the most part, he's just sort of been the creepy uncle on commentary.
Yeah, which I guess he's toned down to a degree, but especially when you look back at a lot of the Attitude Era, where he was at his creepiest. Certainly, that is kind of the image most have of this man. Mm-hmm. Is at times a very uncomfortable feeling that he would leave on you as he would be observing the women. I mean, even going back to like the year 2000 of stuff that I don't know if that would fly today. Forget the WWE climate, just social and just. As a public company, if you would want to be positioning particular image of women.
Lawler himself says in this documentary he cringes at some of the things that he hears himself say back in that era. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of it came from him, but I'm sure he was also told to play that character to help, you know, create that tone.
They were pretty brief in terms of his upbringing, noting that his father had 7 heart attacks throughout his life and would eventually die in 1965, which was right before Lawler would get involved in professional wrestling. He debuted in 1970, but his dad was a big wrestling fan, would take him to the shows, and Lawler kind of outlined how that was a big disappointment that his dad never got to see him perform, whereas his mother got to see the majority of pretty much his entire career, and then, of course, a number of years ago, dying right as they were doing the Miz angle, yeah, and turned that into a part of the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't really talk about that.
No, they didn't bring that up, and I mean, it was not that far removed because the Miz feud got a lot of focus on this, which at the time I really did enjoy that feud, but it was hardly the defining period of Jerry Lawler's career. But that was kind of positioned as his biggest thing that he did in the WWE.
In recent years, I mean, it resulted in a match.
I thought that, you know, it seemed that they took the, you know, it was like the Miz feud, Andy Kaufman, and as a commentator. It's like those are the big focuses of this, and there's so much to a Jerry Lawler documentary. So my expectations were admittedly very high for this.
Would you have liked to have seen more of his main rivalries, like as a professional wrestler, featured?
I just think that there was so much. Like, depending on what footage they did have from Memphis, I mean, they did the hard work. They brought in Jerry Jarrett. Mm-hmm. They interviewed Lance Russell, which, you know, Lance Russell is, you know, there's not too many opportunities they're probably going to have to interview Lance Russell. This was the project to do it with. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate a History of Memphis DVD coming out. They interviewed Bill Dundee, Jimmy Hart. You had everyone at your disposal in the WWE. They had Vince interviewed for this, who doesn't do a ton of these anymore. Mm-hmm. Jim Ross. Like, you had every key figure. Bob Zamuda, who was Andy Kaufman's longtime writing partner. Like, they brought in everybody for this. So when they aired that 30-minute preview on the network a few weeks back, and you see all these names that they interviewed, I was like, wow, this is going to be extensive. And it was just like, it felt like it was something that they probably did lengthy interviews with these, and just they cut it down to fit into a 90-minute window, which for all we know might be an edict now for the network to get these documentaries at a reasonable time to put in a window.
And honestly, like I said, I don't really have a problem with the 90 minutes, but it's just I agree with you that I think it was almost like split evenly between his WWE in-ring career and his Memphis career, and I believe I would have been probably a lot more interested in, you know, a lot of the significant Memphis rivalries that he had.
Yeah, Memphis got, I would say, 30 minutes maybe of this hour 20 documentary. And, I mean, just kind of showing the different highlights, Lawler attending the Ellis Auditorium, which predated the Mid-South Coliseum, and then how he got involved, first going to this outlaw promotion, and then while working at a radio station, he was kind of taken under the wing of Jackie Fargo, who was the top star in Memphis, getting them into the territory, and then starting essentially without any training. He lied to get into his first professional wrestling match for the said outlaw promotion, and then really catching fire. He would feud with Jackie Fargo. He would get the King gimmick from Bobby Shane, who was going under the King moniker prior to that, and then talking about the balance of power switching, because Memphis was promoted by Nick Gulas, and Jerry Jarrett was working under Nick Gulas, and then thought that he had bought a percentage of the territory when Nick Gulas kind of double-crossed him, saying you had bought the option to purchase more in the company. And that led to a big revolt with Jerry Jarrett taking the key guy in Jerry Lawler. And that resulted in Lance Russell and Dave Brown, who were broadcasters for Channel 13, and going over to Channel 5. And that would result in pretty much the end of Nick Gulas promoting wrestling, and Jerry Jarrett would be running Memphis. Eventually, Jerry Lawler would become a 50-50 owner with Jerry Jarrett. And that was the kickoff to kind of the Memphis territory and where things went from here in the documentary.
Yeah, in terms of the feuds featured, they talk a lot about the Jackie Fargo feud, of course, and also his match with Jack Briscoe for the NWA World title. And, you know, just the way that they were able to explain the booking of it made just wrestling booking sound so simple and logical. You take a hot heel or babyface and you put them over big name contenders to set them up for a title match, a world title match. And you know, it feels like it's very difficult to stay to that formula today.
Yeah, and that was the quest for the title show that they did in 1974, where Jack Briscoe came in and they did a DQ finish with Lawler. But it was certainly Jerry Lawler was the focused guy by this point, as early as 1974, and going beyond that, I really enjoy just the footage that they did have. Some of this, the Memphis footage, has not been kept in the best of conditions, but nonetheless, I think that kind of adds to it as well, kind of the grainier old footage they have, and I'd be curious how much they're sitting on at this point.
Yeah, I wonder if there were limitations about how much they were able to show. Maybe that's why you only got half an hour on a lot of this stuff. But I think, though, you know, the most interesting stuff that I was looking forward to was the Andy Kaufman stuff, and they spent a good chunk of time on that.
Yeah, Andy Kaufman, they introduced, the story's been told that he was, you know, a massive wrestling fan, would go to shows at Madison Square Garden and approached Vince McMahon Sr. with the idea. And essentially, they just scoffed at this idea that us bringing in an actor to do wrestling would just be beneath us.
It was great because you had Vince McMahon actually talk about it, which I've never heard him talk about.
Yeah, Vince gave kind of his perspective on it. Now, this was when Vince Sr. was running things, but Vince Jr. was obviously in the thick of things at the time working for the company. And that led to Bill Apter, who was friends with Andy Kaufman, putting him in touch with Jerry Lawler. And as much as people look at the WWF for introducing, you know, just off the wall a presentation of pro wrestling, I mean, Memphis was the forerunner for that, and doing wild, having these wild characters, doing wild gimmicks, and they thought it was the greatest gift of all to get this Andy Kaufman character. It would get them notoriety outside of their territory, and it led to Kaufman cutting all these heel promos, challenging women out of the crowd, which they had footage of, and then building up to a match in April of 1982, which was actually – it was promoted as a match that would happen, but Lawler was also promoted as – in a separate match that night. He was already going to be involved in another match, and the Kaufman thing was almost this add-on. But the footage, most people have seen it. Just not even a match, more so an angle.
See, they didn't – yeah. Oh, they did show this match, and they have it on the DVD as
Yeah,
extra,
it,
right?
It is on in full.
But,
in the,
and Lawler, like, you know, even comments about how he feels bad that they never actually gave the crowd a full match, that it was just really, you know, boom, 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 pile driver, and that was it. But I thought they did a good job of, you know, talking about how shocked and surprised. I mean, the surprise when, you know, Kaufman just stayed there dead and was basically kind of calling an audible to call an ambulance out. People, you know, if you're interested in this, the documentary Andy Kaufman on From Hollywood, which Jay and I reviewed that one week, one of the weeks that where you weren't here,
right?
That goes into a lot more detail about Andy Kaufman's pro wrestling career. But I thought this was a good, you know, good compliment to that. This little 10-minute section, if you're already familiar with the topic.
Yeah, I think most people. It's a very memorable feud involving the two. But at the time, I mean, it didn't sell out the Mid-South Coliseum, and they did good business together. But it's not like this was Jerry Lawler's defining program in terms of a draw. Like, it was good, but nothing appreciably above what Jerry Lawler would do with others, like your Bill Dundees or just, you know, a who's who of opponents. But
I wish we had more about that stuff. I mean, you had Bill Dundee interviewed here. I mean, awful die job, by the way, Bill Dundee.
Well, you know, you're trying to turn back that clock as much as you can at a lengthy age. But this, of course, led to the appearance in July of 1982, after they had done the big angle in April, where they got on to Late Night with David Letterman. And it was, at the time, just Kaufman they wanted. And they kind of had to pull a lot of strings to get Lawler involved in this. And I guess you can kind of outline the segment for those that haven't seen it, but they did not have the rights to air that here.
They did not, but honestly, in this day and age where you can pull out your phone and Google it and find it on YouTube, it's not that big of a hindrance. I thought they did a pretty good job just trying to tell the story through photos. They did have some stock photos, and the original plan was for them to, you know, apologize to each other, and then they would sing "What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love," but then Andy just wanted to fuck with them even more, and so they just decided to get into that shouting match, and then water was thrown, and then all that happened. And You know, I thought it was, this part was kind of well done. And again, if you are curious more about the actual segment, watch it yourself. Watch that Andy Kaufman documentary and then watch this for Lawler's perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, David Letterman, he grew up a big wrestling fan in Indiana. And it was after this segment on the show that he pretty much didn't want anything to do with wrestling. I mean, mm-hmm. he came on the next night on his show basically saying this was all a work, but no one believed it at the time. They all thought this was legit. And I thought they really dropped the ball in terms of promoting this, because this DVD came out the day before Letterman's final show, and I think you could have done a great job on Raw of just recounting this and showing a clip. And I mean, if you don't have the footage of the Letterman thing, fine, but just to talk about it when Letterman was just front and center for everybody that week, you had this perfect timing. It wouldn't even surprise me if they coordinated this release to be right as Letterman's final show was airing. And you had that's a very famous segment in, forget for wrestling fans, for anybody when it comes to late night television.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, just as a fan who kind of loosely knew about Lawler's career but never really knew all that much about it, the hook for a documentary like this really is the Andy Kaufman stuff, I think. And like I said, very little promotion I found for the DVD in this footage.
So we would continue there from the Andy Kaufman piece. They did interview Bob Zmuda and Lynn Margulies, who was dating Kaufman for the final year of his life.
Who Courtney Love played.
Yes, yeah, who Courtney Love played. And there's been a dispute involving Andy Kaufman's brother and these two, who had put out this like unauthorized book on Andy Kaufman a couple of years back. So there's been contention between – it's the Kaufman family doesn't necessarily endorse these two, with the argument that Lynn Margulies just kind of hooked up with Kaufman right towards the end of his life and doesn't have necessarily the connection that she purports to have. But that is an issue that has been out there in the public over the last while. And then after the Andy Kaufman bit, we kind of just fast forward to essentially working with the Memphis and AWA territories working together, Lawler winning the title in 1988 from Kurt Hennig, and the Super Clash 3 show at the end of 1988 involving Lawler and Kerry Von Erich, and kind of the AWA on its last legs and Memphis kind of slowing down as well.
Why haven't they done an AWA documentary?
They did. They did a number of years back.
Oh, okay.
They put one out in 2006, 2007. And so they talked about how Jerry Jarrett was coming to the WWF and was working very closely with them, because this was when Vince McMahon was on trial for steroid distribution, and there was the fear that he could face jail time. And if that were to happen, Jerry Jarrett would be the day-to-day operator of the WWF, clearly showing the faith that Vince McMahon had in Jerry Jarrett. And it was at this time they were looking for a new heel announcer, and Jerry Jarrett made the recommendation to bring in Jerry Lawler, who would debut in December of 1992, and brought in as an announcer, not brought in to be your everyday wrestler at the time, at a time when the guy was one of the best talents on the roster, but being used for announcing. And then the first big angle he would be a part of, the one we reviewed a couple of weeks ago at the King of the Ring with Bret Hart, not discussed too much, though they did interview Bret for this as well as Natalya, and talking a bit about just his quick wit, insulting the fans. They showed different clips from the King's Court segment he would do, and getting a full-time position on Raw after Randy Savage left the company, and Lawler going out of his way to note how Vince McMahon could not have cared less about Randy Savage leaving the company at the time and going to WCW. So when you hear the same narrative that, oh, WCW stole all of our guys, and then you push this same one that we couldn't have cared less, I mean, you got to somewhat pick your story and kind of run with it. But this was just where I thought it was very jarring that we had gone from Andy Kaufman in 1982 to announcer in 93 with a brief AWA involvement in 1988. It's just like there's so much in the 80s that you could talk about with Jerry Lawler, and here we are all of a sudden in the Attitude Era and talking about Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross replacing Vince McMahon when they had the three-man crew and going into Ross and Lawler in the Attitude Era.
I would assume that, you know, maybe for their audience they would find this more relevant than, you know, focusing on a lot of stuff in the 80s.
So we looked at his, I guess, pervert mode, and Road Dogg, who I remember this very clearly, the first man to ever utter the term puppies in relation to Deborah, and then Jerry Lawler kind of took this one and just ran with it, and this has become one of his synonymous phrases for talking about a woman's tits.
Yeah, puppies. There's a little section here prior to that where he kind of talks about the chemistry he has with JR, and I think you know, it really should be more expanded upon just exactly how good these two were together. I mean, I think we all think of Lawler as the comedy of the two, but I think JR is really just as funny, like, but just in a different way. This man is just one of the driest, most sarcastic people ever, but you know all the jokes that are going on in his head, and I think he's just perfect as a straight man for that reason, and making these two, I think, a fantastic team.
Yeah, if there was a part of – if we're being critical of like what was we're going to dedicate time to, I would say running for the mayor of Memphis. Yes, it emphasized his celebrity in Memphis, but I took that as almost a given for most people watching this. But we spent an inordinate amount of time looking at this failed campaign run in 1999 where Lawler flat out states that he was playing off of Jesse Ventura, who had just won in 1998 and becoming the governor of Minnesota. He got The Rock to campaign for him, which if I was a politician...
It was The Rock in 99, though.
Yeah. He was pretty popular in 1999.
Okay, but not like The Rock now.
Not now, but I mean, this was... The WWF was pretty much on fire at this point by 99. I would just... If I was a politician, I would just be pissed about this guy that I would severely question his platforms that he is running on and what the people are aware of. Nonetheless, he did lose. He came in third, they noted, of the 12 candidates. And in a bit of a surprise, they interviewed Stacy Carter, one of his ex-wives, who was a big part of Lawler's leaving in 2001, which I think you had to address in this because there was that period that he left for the majority of the year. And she's interviewed. They went over Carter's release in February of 2001, which you have to remember, they made it clear in here. This was a Vince McMahon call that they had nothing for Stacy Carter. And Jim Ross, who was the head of talent relations, was put in a terrible role that he had to tell Lawler that they were getting rid of his wife, but they wanted Lawler to continue. And Lawler, out of, you know, loyalty to his wife, quit the company. And Vince just immediately shook his hand, thanked him for his time. And Lawler, you could tell, really didn't want to leave. You know, very much enjoyed his job, but was caught here in a horrible position. And then Paul Heyman would come in the next week. They addressed it right off the top on Raw, and that would lead to the whole invasion storyline, where it was Jim Ross and Paul Heyman for the duration of that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the cat talks about it, and you know, and they don't really get much into how their relationship dissolved. But I mean, Stacey,
you can read about it in length in Jerry Lawler's book.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, what is
every detail about Jerry Lawler finding out that there was another man she was seeing, and going back and stating that he was aware she was lying to him, and then he said, there was part of me that wished I was making love to her when I brought this up to her. Very weird stuff.
Awesome.
And then Lawler basically saying he hit like the rock bottom point of his life after breaking up with Stacy Carter in the summer of 2001.
Okay. You know, you say all this and you don't even have to finish the story. I wished all that emotion was in this documentary because – I mean, the way they just gloss over so many things like that, it just feels like this whole documentary just really felt like an on-the-surface fluff piece, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it felt like
didn't feel honest.
Yeah, like Stacy Carter, I can't imagine how much of her time she spent sitting down and being interviewed here, but she was largely used for, I would say, 60 seconds.
Mm. She said, you know, she felt bad that he lost his job because of her, and that was it. We didn't hear anything about her. Afterwards.
Like, I understand respecting people's privacy. You don't want to bring up, you know, dirty laundry, but it's out there in Jerry Lawler's book. I mean, this is not new ground you're covering by talking about the circumstances of how Lawler quit out of loyalty to his wife and then came back in November without his wife.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that part goes kind of unexplained, and I can see how the viewer would be somewhat confused by all this because they very much gloss over it. But they do interview Vince, who, to my recollection, never commented on Lawler leaving at the time in 2001 and applauded him for leaving. And this is worth noting because Vince McMahon has always had a very unique relationship with Jerry Lawler, unlike many other announcers who have talked about how difficult it's been to be produced by Vince. And you can tell Vince McMahon has always had a respect for Jerry Lawler, whether it's the fact that he ran a promotion, whether it's because he was a legitimate top star, whatever it is, you can always sense that between Jerry Lawler and Vince McMahon, that there is a mutual respect and doesn't view himself as, you know, boss and employee. And I think that Vince McMahon held a lot of respect here, as he said, for Lawler leaving, as opposed to if Lawler had just, you know, shrugged his shoulders and said, well, I'll stay around while you fire my wife. So Lawler left and pretty much said he had to go back to working independent shows, and they skipped over the marriage ending, and all of a sudden Kevin Dunn called him and Lawler came back in November of 2001. And there was so much during this period. At one point, Jerry Lawler even posting Kevin Dunn's phone number online, or sorry, not his phone number, his email address, and saying, hey, fans, if you want me back, here's the address to send and let them know. And they got flooded with people at the time. And so
I can't believe that worked.
Hey, I was stunned at the time they did bring back Lawler because I thought they were just – there's some times where they wipe their hands clean of someone and they're gone. But there was certainly a level of trust in Lawler being on their main broadcast every Monday. And when Heyman was being transitioned out at the end of the invasion, Lawler was brought in. And as well, Lawler was involved in those Jimmy Hart's XWF organization as well. So I think they were also in a certain – strategy of plucking talent from the XWF because Hogan was attached to that, and they would bring Lawler in. They'd bring in Kurt Hennig, who was one of their main guys. So I think that played into it as well. But again, none of that's going to be addressed in a WWE documentary. And then from this was the biggest jump. We go from 2001 to he goes into the Hall of Fame in 2007.
I guess not much happens in between, eh?
In fairness, it wasn't, you know, a booming period for Jerry Lawler, I guess. He was the announcer at that point. But it's like, this felt like a jump cut.
Yeah.
We go to 2007, and Lawler not wanting to go into the Hall of Fame because he thought that signaled the end of his career. But we got to hear one highlight from his speech, Way. He says he references the Chinese speaker, On Too Long, which he doesn't want to go in his speech. And Jim Ross just puts his head down and did the Wei Ting head shake.
Yeah, I've heard of his cousin Wei Too Low. I heard he was in a plane crash.
God. And then from 2007, we go to 2010 and his feud with then WWE champion The Miz, including a TLC match they had on Raw, which Michael Cole was the one that held Jerry Lawler's leg from climbing the ladder to win the title. And Lawler calls it the most fun he has ever had in a WWE ring. He made sure to differentiate a WWE ring and not from just a wrestling ring. And that would lead to his one and only WrestleMania match in 2011, which he defines as, you know, made his career in wrestling, being able to work WrestleMania. He came out in the same outfit that he wore for his match with Andy Kaufman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The black and red attire. And
still fit.
Yep. And the way they edited this is, you know, Austin raises Lawler's hand and he talks about this great moment. He actually lost the match by DQ.
Creative
but
editing.
It's very much positioned as he beat Michael Cole in his one and only WrestleMania outing. And any thoughts on that period before we take a dark turn?
Honestly, I mean, not that much to say about it. And thus, I assume that's probably why they spent that, you know, not that much time on it. I do think you could have, you know, maybe milked the emotion out of the whole thing a bit more. But it was just sort of a glossed over part of the show.
And as we mentioned, they didn't bring up the fact that the passing of Lawler's mother during this feud was incorporated into this feud because I guess the morbid quotient was more than going to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
From our next chapter, the Jerry Lawler heart attack from September 10th, 2012, during a live edition of Raw from the Bell Center in Montreal, featuring a night where you and I were watching Raw with Nate Milton and Damian Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in our offices.
That's right.
Do our big live Raw with the four of us.
Memorable evening.
And it got super depressing really quickly.
Yeah, it did.
So they show the footage, which at the time it was, I believe there was a replay of Raw where they kept this footage in of Lawler starting to snore on the air. And that grew a lot of ire from certain people that it aired. But there... It's been a while, Way, since I felt this uncomfortable, where they show footage of Lawler being wheeled to the back and the EMTs vigorously performing CPR on Lawler, and somebody made the call, make sure we get this on camera.
Listen, in hindsight, the guy's perfectly fine. He's got a documentary being made out of him. We're going to talk about this. It's incredibly gripping footage to see a man nearly die. At the time, though, I definitely agree. I kind of question.
What would you have done in this situation?
I would have been so uncomfortable filming, you know, as a camera guy.
Like, I think that the fact that that thought even crosses your mind is maybe why I will never win an Emmy Award for being a producer. But that is a line that I could not possibly be thinking about. Well, this makes for great footage.
I wonder what they were thinking.
Like, this was so... This footage was not worth seeing to me. I just seeing an HD quality footage of a man who is literally his heart has stopped.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought this was just so uncomfortable.
I was surprised that they had footage of him in the back being worked on during the heart attack. I was surprised about that. The way they presented the whole segment, though, they have solo. They were able to solo the microphones, and so you could just hear Jerry snoring with the shot of him in the background while the match is going on. And you know, they kind of interview all the people at ringside. There was a producer at ringside who talked about it, and they had a number of cameras tracking him. As you know, you could see the moment when the doctor realized that it wasn't just what they thought it was. It was actually a heart attack, and you could see the moment of panic where everybody decided to just okay, let's get this guy in the back right now. So, some incredible footage of this moment, and For better or worse, it's in this documentary.
I mean, you go back to that night, and I mean this, like, it was a miracle. I mean, that word is thrown around a lot. That the fact that this guy was at a Raw taping where you had EMTs on site, I will always look to this example for why independent shows should be regulated, should have ambulances and have your medical staff that is ready for something like this. Had this been Jerry Lawler, who very much was active on the independent scene, this could have been fatal. And the fact that he not only was saved that night, but pretty much made a close to full recovery that we're aware of, was able to come back on television, able to travel, it's amazing what they were able to do that night and save him from that night. And I will, you know, when all is said and done, I think one of Michael Cole's probably – easily his most difficult broadcast, but he was incredible that night. The way he handled things, the way they laid out and presented the rest of the show with minimal, if any, commentary throughout
this
most of it.
Without commentary.
Yeah. I thought it was a tremendous way of handling it by Michael Cole in a horrible situation.
And to hear Michael Cole talk about it, I mean, the man who was really the closest to the situation ringside, to hear him talk about it in this documentary, it was probably the most real I've seen Michael Cole give an interview on camera. They do gloss over the fact that he had a match prior to this.
That's right. That's right. He did.
Arguably what led to the heart attack.
That's right, because that was where they came up. Of course, they've joked about with the Dolph Ziggler taking the repeated elbow drops. That's right. That they never acknowledged that in this, and probably for certain reasons that people would put
clearly,
you know, some causation. I mean, it would be kind of ridiculous to throw that out as a theory. So that was significant, and I mean, you did have to somewhat cover that in this documentary.
Honestly, like, I don't mean to sound morbid, but I mean, aside from that cop and stuff, this would be the second most significant thing about this documentary.
So nothing regarding the way they brought him back a couple months later involving that angle with CM Punk and Paul Heyman, where they mocked the heart attack that Lawler suffered. That was not brought up.
All that stuff, I don't think, you know, like, you know that it for somebody like Lawler, he probably gave the okay, and if anything, he maybe have even suggested it. So I can't really fault anybody for that.
And then we got the wrap up, essentially, including Vince calling Jerry Lawler a cool guy. The ultimate endorsement. He's just a cool guy.
They always, you know, end these documentaries.
That should have been the name of the documentary. Jerry Lawler.
This cool guy. They always end these WWE documentaries with sort of the, you know, the whole...
I don't like these. They're so...
There's the music ramps up, and then, he's a real special person. He's really, really nice. Just, you know.
He's the best. And hey, Jerry Lawler, an incredible career that this guy has had. I just wish we got more of this, in particular in Memphis. I mean, just so much stuff that you could...
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Dutch Mantel was a very famous tag partner and did some tremendous business with Lawler, the two of them together, and the fact he is a guy that is under contract to you. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know... They did this big promotion with a wrestler versus boxer with Rocky Johnson. Mm-hmm. So much you could talk about during the 80s with him. And I just feel that, you know, these DVDs, I look at them that time should not be a constraint. And I mean, if you're going to go to all of these different people, bring them in, sit them down, like, for Christ's sake, you got Jarrett on this.
I don't even think time is so much the issue as what they decided to focus on. I think in 90 minutes, you could have talked about all that stuff. But I think they wanted to give equal weight to what, you know, the current audience knows him as, and that's commentator. That's, you know, his WWE career, which, I mean, I, as a wrestling fan who wants to know more about the history of it, I'm actually more curious about the other stuff.
Yeah, I just, you know, Jimmy Hart as well, they really never went into... You know, Hart managing him and then turning on him, which did work into the Andy Kaufman feud, where Hart was then paired with Kaufman. Just certain things like that. I think if you want, I do feel Memphis Heat did a much better job at just interviewing all the key people, and it wasn't a Jerry Lawler documentary, but Jerry Lawler is, of course, synonymous.
How much
synonymous
footage, how much footage did they have?
They had quite a bit, and what they worked with, they made a lot of kind of musical montages with the footage that they did have.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a very good documentary. It's one of my favorites over the last couple of years.
In terms of the production, I mean, you know, you kind of get your tradition at this point, pretty traditional cookie cutter type of WWE documentary production. And what that means is everything, you know, is lit very well. It's shot very well. But the way everything is just pieced together, it's been the same sort of chronological telling of, you know, you sit down with the main subject, you interview him for a few hours, and he chronologically talks about everything in his career. You get the B-roll, you lay it over, you put the music track underneath. And I think at this point, it's well and fine. You know, I'm sure it's a low-budget solution to get something out there quick to sell a DVD. But I think at this point, you know, with you know, all the ESPN and all the 24/7s and all that, I think the bar is set way higher for combat sports documentaries. And
I agree.
For that reason, I was kind of disappointed. You know, you had a real opportunity here to be able to go out with Jerry Lawler, to actually shoot some stuff with him outside of, you know, just sitting down. And it looks like they did highlight his drawing a little bit.
I like that. It's kind of the chapter breakups.
It's great.
Where he was just printing or drawing portraits of different rivals of his.
I feel like they could have done a lot more of stuff like that. You know what I mean? Rather than just your, you know, typical sit down talking heads B roll type of thing. And you know,
They did interview his art teacher. They even contacted his art teacher. Helen Stahl.
They did a great job finding the significant people to talk to, but I just also feel like they glossed over a lot of stuff, and I felt like a lot of stuff was just kind of highlighted, shown superficially without really getting to the meat and you know, in certain cases, the realness and the drama of it, the ups and downs, and not just sort of, you know, the highlights.
Yeah. I mean, there's a legendary career and a great story to tell. So obviously expectations are going to be very high. At this point, let's listen to my little chat with Jerry Lawler, an interview I've not listened to. So let's just hear Jerry Lawler, because John Pollock approves this message.
He's a man that made Monday Night Wrestling an institution before there ever was a Raw by way of the Mid-South Coliseum. And this October, he's going to attempt to become the mayor of Memphis, Tennessee. We welcome the Fight Network Radio, Jerry the King Lawler. And Jerry, thanks a lot for taking some time to chat with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having my entrance music. That's very nice.
Oh, we had it all ready, and we got all the rights cleared beforehand.
I don't need an introduction, but if you don't give me one, I'll pile drive you.
There you go. The straps will come down, and my head will be going down into a mat. Now, Jerry, we wanted to chat with you about this decision to run for mayor. You did it in 1999, and now 10 years later, you're running again. What was the decision behind running again at this point in your career?
Well, in 1999, of course, I think you told everybody, I live in Memphis, Tennessee. That's my home where I was born and raised, and, you know, I've lived here all my life. And, of course, once I was with the WWE, like starting 15 years ago, I could have lived anywhere in the country that I wanted to. But, you know, I've stayed here because I love this city. And in 1999, the opportunity came up to there was an election going on for the office of mayor, and it seemed like a lot of candidates were getting into the getting on the ballot, and as a matter of fact, it wound up with 15 candidates. It was the first time ever, the largest field of candidates ever to run for office here in Memphis. And out of the field of 15, I came in third, and I was running against the incumbent mayor Willie Harrington, who was the first ever elected African American mayor in Memphis. And Memphis is the city of Memphis now is about probably 67% African American. So it was a tough battle. It was an uphill climb, but I was real proud of the fact that I came in third. I beat out the Republican candidate. I beat out like 10 or 9 other career politicians, and that was my first ever, you know, attempt at anything political at all. So this year, finally, 17 years after Willie Harrington was first elected, he has resigned office. He has not finished out the term. He had still a little over a year left on his current term, and so the city of Memphis was put in a position of having to have a special election to replace him as the office of mayor. So I've it just seems like the stars are sort of aligned right. All the other candidates that are running for the office are career politicians. They're either city council members or the county mayor is actually running. You know, it's like a lot of career politicians, and then Jerry Lawler, who is just just the average Memphian who wants a better city, who is talking about running the city like a business, and looking at every decision with some common sense, which, unfortunately, here in Memphis, common sense is pretty uncommon down at City Hall.
So tell us about some specific points in your platform in running. I mean, living there in Memphis, I mean, what are some key points that you feel need addressing right now that the current government is not addressing?
Well, sadly, Memphis was just listed in Forbes magazine as the number 2 most dangerous city in America to live in, only behind Detroit. And so obviously crime is the number 1 issue in the city. It's, you know, it's when you talk about crime and you have a city that people are afraid to go out at night, people are, you know, afraid to go down to the store, they might get carjacked, or you're afraid your house is going to be broken into, even if you haven't had a particular crime committed on you personally, you're still a victim of the crimes, because what this criminal element does is it robs everyone in the city of their sense of safety, basically, you know, their sense of peacefulness. I mean, you're constantly on edge, and the other thing it does is, you know, all of this works in like a vicious cycle. When you have a city that people are afraid to live in, they move away. When people move away, you lose your tax base. So things like property tax goes up, and then you try to attract industry and bring in more jobs to, you know, lower that property tax rate. But then the people that own the industries, they come to Memphis and they see, well, this is not a safe city. Will our workers feel safe? Will people want to move to Memphis with my company? And the answer right now is no. And then the other thing is our city school system is getting a failing grade. And so then they also, you know, these business owners that want to bring industry into the city and create jobs, they also say, well, can I get an educated workforce if I move my company to Memphis? Right now the answer to that is no. So the crime and the school system are the two things that need to be addressed. All the other politicians, of course, are saying the same thing, because that is, you know, that's the perception of all the citizens. But the difference in me and the difference in all these politicians is it's going to take money. It's going to take more money. We got to have more police officers. We want to declare a war on crime. You know, we've got a war on terrorism. We want to declare in the city of Memphis a war on crime. It's going to take putting more police officers on the street. It's going to take creating a gang unit. And all of this costs money. Now, the other politicians, the only place that they know how to get money is by raising taxes, because that's the political way of doing things. But in my administration, we're gonna go and we're gonna look with a line by line look at the city budget and find that the money is already there. It's just being wasted, misappropriated, squandered through corruption and just basically wasted. And so, you know, we're gonna go through, reallocate this money into putting it into another way where we can put more officers on the street and just basically break the cycle of crime that's going on here.
Now, tell us a little bit about the double-edged sword, which is the pro wrestling affiliation, because obviously it does bring automatically people in Memphis know who Jerry the King Lawler is. But for critics, I mean, it's such an easy target for them to easily go after. Are there things you learned from running already that you're more ready for in this campaign in terms of, you know, that people are just going to tap, well, this guy's just a pro wrestler. What's he doing in politics? That kind of criticism.
Well, exactly. You're right, and you labeled it perfectly. It is a double-edged sword. The the name recognition that I have from the celebrity that I have from being Jerry the King Lawler, a wrestler that in the city of Memphis has come into the homes of every Memphian every Saturday morning for the past 38 years. I've been on television here in Memphis every single week. You know, and not only that, for the past 15 years, I've been seen in 489 million homes worldwide with the WWE. So I have that. That side of the sword is a good thing, and the fact that there's a certain core of voters that will vote for me because they like me as Jerry the King Lawler. They like that persona. They like that guy that they've come to know over the years. But then by the same token, there are a core of voters out there that say, how can I take this guy serious? Is this a publicity stunt? Is he doing this just to try to get more fame and fortune? And those are the people that I have to assure that this is a serious campaign. It is a serious candidacy. I don't need any more name recognition. I don't need any more fame. Everybody knows Jerry Lawler all over the world, you know. So I'm just in this because I want to be taken serious. I want a better city. I want Memphis to be the best city. Not that it can be. I want Memphis to be the best city in the United States, you know. And I know I've lived here all my life. I know the potential that this city has, and it's just, it needs better leadership. There's a difference in leadership and leading people somewhere than being there's a difference in being a leader and being a manipulator. And sometimes our voters here in Memphis have been manipulated to get to a point for these politicians for their own agenda, and that's what needs to be stopped.
So let's say theoretically a win does come for Jerry the King Lawler. Would you be hanging up the crown at that point, or is it something that you could balance the two? Because I would imagine pretty difficult to be with the WWE and the mayor of Memphis at the same time.
Well, there's a couple of things. Of course, that's a bridge that will have to be crossed when I win. You know, and I'm in this race to win it. That's the other thing that I have to convince some of these some of the people that are the power broker, so to speak, some of the big money people in the city of Memphis. You know, I mean, when they don't take you serious, it's hard to get campaign funds. You know, it's hard to get donations. I have a website right now, JerryLawler2009.com, where, you know, we're asking people for campaign contributions. You know, and I feel uncomfortable asking people for money. So, you know, what we've said is, hey, I don't want anybody to contribute more than $50. And another reason is, if I get elected, I don't want to be beholden. I don't want to owe somebody anything. You know, the last time I ran for mayor, the incumbent mayor spent $1.2 million to get a job that only paid $150,000 a year. So that, to me, if you look at it with common sense, would tell you, either he's planning on making more than $1.2 million at the job, or he's going to owe somebody $1.2 million worth of favors once he gets the job. But that's, you know, that's the way politicians work. I'm just, you know, I'm looking for small donations, and like I said, you know, I want people to know that this is a serious campaign so that they will feel comfortable, you know, making a donation so we can buy some yard signs and bumper stickers and brochures and that sort of thing. But, you know, that's what this is all about. It is a serious campaign. And, oh, and I guess I got off track a little bit because she said, what will happen, you know, if I win this election with the WWE? Well, the city charter in Memphis says that the mayor of Memphis job is a full-time job. And of course, you know, by that I would mean, I would think that our current mayor has, you know, he goes to work every morning at City Hall at 9 o'clock and he works till 5 o'clock in the evening, 5 days a week. That to me is a full-time job, you know. I just really sort of am unsure about exactly what could possibly happen. There may be a way that I could still, you know, I really only work 2 hours a week for the WWE. Mm-hmm. I do the, you know, I do Monday Night Raw, which is a 2 hour program. And of course I fly to it on Monday morning and I get back home on Tuesday morning. You know, who's to say that I couldn't take Monday as a day off instead of Sunday or instead of Saturday? And, you know, so that, like I said, the Monday Night Raw and the WWE affiliation has been great for me. And I think it could be great for the city of Memphis, you know, with me as a mayor. I think that there's things that, that affiliation can bring to the city of Memphis that can help make it a more of an attractive city and make it more of a, you know, our tourism and our entertainment in this city, should be the focal point of getting people to want to come to Memphis, Tennessee. I mean, we've got Graceland here, the home of Elvis Presley, and Elvis Presley Enterprises are sitting there just with the home of Elvis. It's like a little jewel, right in the middle of, I don't know, of a coal mine. You know, it's the one mm-hmm. diamond we have here, and it's not utilized, it's not capitalized on. And I could just see that with the help of, you know, Mr. McMahon and possibly enticing a Donald Trump to come in and make some investments in the city. We have so much potential here, and I think the hookup with the WWE could be very, very beneficial.
Now, I'm curious, Jerry, you were always, in terms of my books, one of the better promo guys in the industry, and I'm curious how much that helps you in terms of conveying your message, because so often we see politicians that don't know clue one about communicating, and it's almost like you see this disconnect between a politician and the voter. And with you having, you know, an entire career where it was talking to fans, getting them to buy tickets and whatnot, how much does that side of the pro wrestling background help you?
Well, I think it's invaluable for me, but in actuality, it's not something that I really think about that much. I guess I almost take it for granted because I have always, my entire career, felt very comfortable in front of a camera or behind a microphone. You know, I don't have any problem talking to one person or talking to 100,000 people. You know, it's just something that has always come natural to me. And yeah, I think that will be beneficial because, you know, there may be some brilliant political minds out there, but you're right. If they can't communicate with the people verbally, then they're in trouble. I mean, and we've had in the WWE and throughout my career, I've seen, you know, hundreds of wrestlers like that, guys that have a tremendous physique and great wrestling ability, but they just don't have that charisma once they're in front of the camera. You know, the camera just doesn't really like them, and they aren't able to communicate their feelings through making a promo or whatever. And trust me, guys that have very a lot of wrestling ability, but very few verbal or communicative skills, they will not go as far as somebody that has great communicative skills and not very good wrestling ability. I mean, the case in point, Hulk Hogan, you mm-hmm. know, possibly the biggest name ever in the history of wrestling because the guy was a communicator. He was charismatic. He could get in front of the camera. The camera loved him. Hulk was never a great wrestler. He'll never claim to be a great wrestler. You know, he was almost a one-trick pony in the ring. You know, his matches were very similar, but he could communicate to the people through, you know, when he was in front of the camera. And so hopefully I'll be able to bring that bit of expertise into the political ring, so to speak, and maybe even out-talk some of these other politicians. But well, believe me, we got some politicians here in Memphis that are pretty good talkers.
Oh, there we go. We'll get some promo wars on Memphis television. Well, Jerry, I want to thank you so much. I encourage all of our listeners to go over to jerrylawler2009.com. The election is October the 15th. And any closing words, Jerry?
Well, you know, once again, I just want to thank you guys for having me on here. Because this is what I got to do. I got to try to get my message out in front of anybody that can hear or see it. You know, and of course the plug for the website is great. It helps me. You know, I mean, if I get a $50 donation here from being on your radio show, it's a tremendous help. Every little bit helps tremendously, and I want to thank you guys for having me on. And I want the people to know, especially the listeners that are listening in the city of Memphis, that Jerry Lawler is very, very serious about this campaign. I want to lead Memphis into the next level and do what's right for this city and make it the great city that it can be. So I really appreciate you letting me be on here.
Would you vote for Jerry Lawler?
If he was running in my hometown?
In any hometown.
Would I vote for him? Yeah, sure. Why not?
I'm sure
he'll do a decent job. I actually never...
Politicians are as valuable as the entertainment they provide.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't hear anything about my local politician anyway, so... We had Rob Ford, so come on.
The bar is set.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get out of here... All right, and as promised, we're now going to hear from Lance Russell, who... One of the greatest wrestling announcers of all time. I feel for me, as I look back, and I watched so much Memphis stuff over the past week, just looking at some of the extras... I mean, this guy and Jim Ross, to me, are one and two. I think Lance Russell is just phenomenal. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal broadcaster. Here he is, a quick chat with Dan Lavransky talking about Jerry Lawler.
I read one writer was speculating that there was this big affinity with guys like Monroe and Fargo and even Lawler because Memphis has never really had a major sports team, and these guys became that, kind of got that focus.
That's true, and if you don't believe it, the fact that when they brought in the Memphis Grizzlies in their pro football league and they had some... Big Rise, I can't remember the guy, not Amici, but it was somebody else that came in as a fullback. There were three of them that were on the Memphis team.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have them, other guys turning in pro football. They had guys on the pro football teams that turned wrestling. that's true. Two or three of them that were... the ones that I remember, I can't remember any of their names. Somebody asked me that the other day. But they were big offensive linemen, usually, or defensive
right.
linemen. Or what, that went into pro wrestling. And I don't know. Maybe that's the answer. You may have it on the head. They never had a big team there, so they made their own big team, but I can tell you one thing. They loved it, and we love them.
Just, again, with the Elvis correlation, I mentioned that Jackie Fargo did his own records and stuff. Man, as a collector, I would love to get my hands on some Jackie Fargo records. I'm assuming they're probably pretty rare in this day and age. Do you have any?
I would think. I do not, as a matter of fact. I really... in all honesty, I'm just not much for collecting records and that. I have a record collection that came back when we still had 33 and a third being sold and all of that. I've got them in a steel trunk out in a little house that I have in my backyard, but I haven't updated it, and I don't even have Lawler's stuff.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a collector, so I have some of Jimmy Lawler's stuff. I have most of Jimmy Hart's stuff, although I still need a recording of Lance's banana nose.
Oh, yeah, it's Lance Russell's nose.
Yeah, that's it, Lance Russell's
they went
nose.
National with it. They Jimmy was smart enough to realize that that Barbra Streisand had a bigger following than I did, so he. he changed the words to Barbra Streisand rather than Lane.
Oh.
And put it out nationally, yeah. That's what he did.
Okay, so I think that's on the record that I have then. So that one was originally Lance Russell's nose, and he changed it to Barbra Streisand.
Yeah.
Ah. Very interesting. That was the other thing that was so cool with, you know, Sputnik, Jackie Fargo, Lawler, is that you guys hit way early on that whole, and it's really obvious nowadays, especially when you have wrestlers fronting metal bands like Chris Jericho, but that great, the way that just wrestling and rock and roll, more than any other sport, the two of them just go together so well.
They sure do, and the thing about that, and again, this was another thing that was you got to hang on the plus side to Jerry Jarrett. He recognized that, and the first one that I ever saw was done by Lawler. Lawler lived up in Nashville, and Jarrett got hot about that because he didn't believe that any wrestler should live where they had a big town that was drawing well, because he thought the familiarity
right.
would ruin the appeal of people paying to come out. In part what he said is true, but it was certainly proven the other way, because Lawler moved back to Memphis, and that was one, because this was after he was a big hot drawing card, and so Jared, he said, I'm going back there. My mother's back there, and his father passed away when he was young and all that. So, and he went back, and all it did was make him big enough
yeah.
where he ran for mayor twice in the city of Memphis, and he was still packing them in there. And so you'd have to question the original premise about having
Lance, if Jackie Fargo ever ran for mayor, would he have got elected?
No. I just don't think so. But we'll never know. That's for sure. Jackie was awfully popular, but so is Lawler. Lawler still is.
Yeah.
And of course, Lawler's kind of a traitor because he knocked Vince so bad.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Before he ever went up with
right.
him, you know, I mean, it was something, and the people thought he was kind of a traitor at first and made a lot of people mad, but they didn't stay that way.
Yeah,
they still don't.
Time heals all wounds, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the truth.
Now
it's interesting to see some of the stuff that you're talking about on the internet and YouTube and all of that stuff. There's so much I get a kick out of it.
It's great.
So what a show, way. Jerry Lawler and Lance Russell.
Amazing. I feel like I'm in
I think we got more in depth with these two than the documentary did.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
And Way is drawing pictures.
I am. This is.
I do not look like
this
that.
This is you. This is your dad and your grandfather. Three generations of the Pollocks.
Did you catch that photo in the background?
I did. They showed him drawing it. He talks about it.
Yeah.
He's a great artist.
Oh, he's really tremendous. Good.
And yeah, that's why, you know, I would have, is there a bonus of him sketching?
There were no bonuses.
It'd actually be really boring to watch, probably.
Sketching. Man, it's like a 5-hour process.
The whole disc dedicated to him, like two discs dedicated to him drawing a photo.
It's funny because like there would be the obvious play on words if like he was like this terrible headliner and be like, huh. I never thought this dude could draw, but it was actually the complete opposite. He could draw in the literal and figurative sense.
Very nice. What do you rate this?
You know, as I said, I went in with big expectations. They did, to me, the tough stuff. They got these people available to interview, mm-hmm. and I was left wanting so much more, and I'm going to give this one a 5.5 out of 10.
Hmm.
I'm going to be harsh on this one because I've especially watching that first look, I was just thinking, man, this is going to be the definitive piece on Jerry Lawler.
They do a satisfying job, you know, kind of highlighting his whole thing, and they spent a deserved amount of time on the cop and stuff and the heart attack, which are probably the things that will hook. Yeah, it sounds terrible to say, but the things that will probably hook people to watch this the most. So I give it a 6.
6 out of 10.
C.
Are there any personalities that the WWE has access to that you would that you're still waiting to see a very thorough documentary on? Because I mean, they've pretty much run the gamut at this point of yeah. most of the key people.
Well, I think about. They're having to resort to non-wrestlers now, and we saw that with the Paul Heyman documentary, and now Jerry. I mean, Jerry Lawler is a pro wrestler, of course, but I mean, known as a non-wrestler. And you think about who else has
the Michael Cole story.
Not Michael Cole, but I mean, somebody deserving like a Jim Ross. But then again, how do you do a documentary on somebody who's never had a match? I mean, he has had matches, but, you know, not really.
I mean, for Jim Ross, I think it'd be pretty basic that you'd be putting some of his. The best matches he's called from the library.
Absolutely.
Tons of options.
Absolutely. I think there's a ton of story there. I mean, just with him and the WWE and the
and they probably would put in some of the matches he's been involved with, which would be not the highlights
the
of
thing
his
is,
career.
If they do one on Jim Ross, I just hope that they think a little outside the box in terms of presentation. You can't just go with him like...
He's also a guy not with the company, and I really don't see that one happening.
Mm. He was involved in this, though.
He was involved, but very different to be involved versus getting your own documentary. Like, I don't think the Bill Dundee story is coming down the pike either.
Okay, I wouldn't put Jim Ross on the level of Bill Dundee, though.
Yeah,
Jim Ross is a lot more closely tied.
Well, yes,
he's a lot more famous and well-known for the Attitude Era. But, you know, who else hasn't had a documentary yet?
I mean, they did do... a DVD on Vince McMahon over a decade ago, but it was, you know, it had its... That would be a fascinating review, actually, one day to go back and watch that piece of fiction and nonfiction. It was a weird mix of both. I mean, I'm thinking of them. It's like a lot of the guys that have the lengthy careers. I mean, certainly there's the pics of, like, you know, an official Undertaker kind of out of character to look at his entire career. That would certainly be fascinating. And maybe the fact he's doing Austin's podcast is a signal that they will go that way. Sting, I think, will be a given they'll do. It's just a matter of time. We certainly got the Hunter homily, and you know I don't. They've done so many on Shawn Michaels, the Austin ones, the Rocks. It's
you
like
got to think about also what would sell. You know, what is attractive to a fan base, and it doesn't have to necessarily mean a mainstream fan base. I certainly didn't think the Paul Heyman documentary was necessarily geared towards a mainstream fan base.
I don't think a Lesnar one actually would be all that engaging. I don't know how great Lesnar would
be when he's
kind of
they've done specials and stuff on.
Yeah, but I mean the sit down interview with Brock and the people around him could probably add insight. But Brock himself, I don't know. Like reading his book. It really wasn't that...
I'll tell you who I want to see a documentary of. JTG.
Oh, boy. You mean more than 60 pages worth?
Yeah. It could only be 30 minutes. It's fine.
That's it. The Crime Time Saga.
No, damn. Why did I make
this? Damn, why did I produce this DVD?
Yeah.
It could be a... They could take this... It could be a screenplay.
It should be like a cartoon. You know, you'd make a great cartoon.
Oh, we should...
Or a sketch, like an SNL sketch.
I would like to get JTG on our show at some point. I would love to chat with him about this book.
Yeah.
It was one of my more favorite reads of the year.
It was fun.
Okay. Well, that's going to wind things down. Quite the look at Jerry Lawler. Hopefully this lived up to your expectations for our look at the career of Jerry Lawler, 45 years worth in the industry. Next week, Mr. Ting, you had a request... You want a review?
I had a pay-per-view. I had a request from the request thread.
Oh, brought to you by lawradio.proboards.com.
Yes, our man Brad is, of course, keeping tabs on that, updating that on a daily, hourly,
secondly
basis. And one of the requests from the month of June of 2007, WWE One Night Stand.
One Night Stand. The first non- ECW nostalgia-based one-night stand. This was fully into the reintegration of ECW into the wrestling diet, as it was its now third touring brand for the WWE, and headlined by John Cena and the Great Khali.
Quite. That's the reason why I chose it. I really want to see that match.
Cena-Khali. It's coming up next week. One-night stand, 2007. I can't wait, Mr. Ting.
Wait, anything else of note on the show?
I believe there was a ambulance match or a stretcher match with Randy Orton and Rob Van Dam. And I guess that's about it.
That's it.
One night stand.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing else.
Okay. Next week, we'll chat about that show. You can leave us your feedback, as always, at lawradio.proboards.com. Where can we follow you?
At way0937. And if you make a joke about my name, I will never talk to you again.
See, that's the delivery. The stone-cold delivery of Wei Ting.
Yeah.
You can follow me at I am John Pollock. If you make any jokes to any of the Magnificent Seven, I will mute you.
Okay.
I love that mute button.
Mute's great. It's good.
It's the best.
Mute's great.
Because
why wouldn't you just unfollow? Why would you follow him anyway?
No, that doesn't mean people can comment at you without you following them.
If you mute them, they can't even message you. They can't even mention you.
If you muted me, I could still write, Wei Ting, you're a loser, but you'll never see it. And I'll keep typing and I'll keep messaging you thinking I'm getting to you, but nothing's coming through. It's an invisible wall. Wow. Whereas blocking, I can see you've blocked me. Muting, it just means you won't see any messages from me ever again. But I won't know any better.
Okay.
It's awesome because you're fucking with them on top of it.
Yeah.
That's the part I enjoy the most. Because there's some people.
Why wouldn't you just block them? I still don't get it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you tell them that you've blocked them?
The lowest scum on earth take pride in being blocked. It's some badge of honor, which
I see.
Probably goes next to their unemployment status. And it's, I got blocked by this guy. Whereas muting, they don't even get that validation.
Yeah, but the fact that you don't respond, they could probably tell that you're muting them.
No.
I got muted by John Pollock.
I don't care. If you are a dick, you are muted. And I have no shame in muting the hell out of people. I block too. I try to, I go 50-50. It's a case-by-case basis. The verdict is always I win. That's what I like about Twitter.
Oh, boy.
My never-ending feud with this social media service that will one day result in me deleting Twitter. I know it'll happen. I know it'll be a spur-of-the-moment change. And I know that the next day I'll wake up and it'll be like a weight is off my shoulders. And I no longer have to deal with that fucking bird and people.
And then the next day you'll wake up and you'll just be like, oh, I wonder what's going on. And you'll download it and you'll be back on. And the whole cycle will repeat.
I don't know about that. It's the 2% that you hate and 98% that are always pleasant.
A lot of people are getting off of Facebook. I don't necessarily sense people getting off of Twitter.
Yeah, I like Facebook much more than Twitter.
Do you? Okay.
I don't know. Twitter, it's like
I'm kind of done with Facebook.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't use it for... I don't use it as kind of
I don't even like...
If we did not do this, I would probably not need Facebook at all. I only use it as it's like a work tool. And
What is there to do on Facebook?
You can message people. To me, it's a news source anyway. It's like a small part of just scanning.
You got Twitter for that.
Yeah. And it makes me... I can see what my friends are doing.
Facebook,
the ones I haven't talked
Facebook
to.
Is really, really good to see what the latest funny vines are and the funny cat pictures.
That's true. I also like the sped up videos now that are they're doing something. And I just get hooked on watching them.
Oh, like cooking videos?
Sure, where they speed it up so that's cooking. All of a sudden, boom, I have created this masterpiece.
Yeah. I watch wrestling like that sometimes.
You know what I want to do in the future? I'll tell you this contest off the air.
Okay.
Someone will steal it if I give the idea out now until we're ready to do it, but it's awesome. Okay, that's going to wrap us up. How should we end this show? You know what we're going to end this with? We're going to end this with some Terry Funk during the Empty Arena match. That is everyone's homework assignment. Go watch the Empty Arena match with Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk from 1982. It's great.
And watch it in an empty room.
Yeah, it's got to be an empty room.
Yeah.
And preferably sing along and do Terry Funk impressions as he's yelling about, my eye!
My eye!
Terry Funk.
My eye!
A victim of his own plotting in there. Lawler kicked him right in the elbow and the stick stuck Terry Funk right in the eye.
Lawler, please, somebody get me help.
We got to, we got to get a doctor in here on this thing because he really is. Oh, that's awful.
Get me help. Give me help.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly why...
You bastard!
There are officials assigned two matches to try to keep some kind of order rather than have the animal type of thing that you saw here today.
Please, my eye.
Jerry Lawler walks away.
My eye.
I guess the victor out of it, but they're... It's pretty difficult. Okay, listen, Randy, I'm gonna get...
Help me, Lance,
okay,
please.
Wait.
Call a doctor, Lance, okay. Please. Let me go get something. Call it. Okay. Okay. Look at it, Lowell. Please, hey. Look at it. Oh, and please,
listen, I'll go.
Help me, please.
Okay, I'll go call for it.
God, Lance, please don't leave me here.
I'll get somebody.
Don't leave the son of a bitch. And get somebody to help me. My eye. My eye. Where is he? Where is Lawler? Where'd he go? Where is Lawler? My eye. Where is that chicken? Where's that damn coward? Where's Lawler? He's yellow. Lawler's yellow. He's yellow. Lawler, come back here. You yellow pig! Pig!
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. It's a pretty good show.
What show? Ours?
Yeah. Oh, we just did. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I thought some people actually were requesting that we do some ROH or PWG stuff with Kevin Steen.
It's so hard to find.
I know. Like, where do people find it? You know, you don't want to get into that.
I would love to do more PWG myself personally. Yeah. I just wonder how many people listening are going to be able to find it and. Do they want to hear us review a show that they don't have the context of, or do they like that?
Yeah, maybe they like it. You know, I also think that, you know, I mean, that's a great shirt you're wearing. Where'd you get that?
Feet. Oh, shit. We forgot to do feedback, didn't we? Did we do feedback?
Oh, feedback? Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Shit.
That was really bad. Don't use any of that.
No, I'm going to use all of that. Okay, we're back. We legitimately forgot about feedback, and it was a great scene that we reenacted.
We tried to reenact
yes,
the whole thing.
But, yeah, much like...
I was trying to sneak in a plug in there, too, for ProWrestlingTees.com/...
We need to start putting out, dress shirts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because we already talked about your shirt today.
Look what I found over the weekend.
Wow. That's old school. John found a bunch of old law shirts.
Oh, I showed you this on Monday night. Never mind.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Okay. Feedback time. Let's go and start off with Chris in Ottawa. Hey, fellas. I have not seen the documentary, but I'm very much looking forward to your review as Lawler has quite the story to tell. Both of us agree. I'm especially curious to learn whether they spent any time looking at Lawler's feud with the original incarnation of Mr. McMahon in the USWA in the early 90s. Are either of you familiar with this? Very familiar. An incredible series of videos entitled McMemphis is on YouTube, and I think it would make for a fantastic edition of a future review away. I will also formally request this in the request thread, but it is some of the funniest Vince McMahon work I've ever seen. And he lists off guest appearances. Yeah, for those not familiar, the USWA was what would eventually become the Memphis Territory in the 90s. And Jerry Lawler was running the USWA while still working with the WWF. And in 93, Vince McMahon started going down to Memphis and playing a heel character. And I don't think it was with the foresight that this would eventually evolve into something he could do on the main roster. But it was, I think, Vince McMahon... When he was younger, he always wanted to be a performer, and his dad never wanted him to be. And I think this was Vince McMahon getting to play a character he had always wanted to, but couldn't on the national stage given his position. Hmm. And, yeah, it's been documented, but much like a lot of stuff we've outlined, this was never brought up in the documentary. And it would have been fun to see some of this footage of, an early Mr. McMahon character years before it would become – one of the biggest grossing feuds in company history.
We got a Nairby and Chubb in Toronto who says, we were waiting for the WWE to come out with the Jerry Lawler documentary for a couple of years now. We like this, but for some reason it feels like some things were missing, but we can't put our finger on it. The heart attack segment was a bit uncomfortable to watch, especially seeing photographers and camera people taking pictures and recording it all. Question for you two, if you were to go into cardiac arrest while recording Review Raw in the studio, would you want cameras to keep recording for a potential John or Way documentary?
If no. Way... even stopped for a second to make sure that our camera, first of all, our studio setup.
It sucks.
It is not the most dynamic when it comes to new angles.
It would miss it.
If I fell on the floor.
The camera would miss it. It would be off balance in terms of color. The iris would be too low.
I would like to think that Way's priority would be saving me and not the John Pollock story.
Yeah. I'll probably, you know, look over and tell Sarge to do something.
get the camera. I don't know. Nothing. What a morbid question.
No, I would not. Yeah, pro wrestling's different, though. The show continues, no matter what.
I just imagine that, you know, picture this happening at, like, a hockey game. Some guy just falls flat on the ice, and they take him to the back to try and revive this body. Do you think the cameras will be rolling on this guy?
I don't know. I really don't.
I'm not saying this is an exclusive mindset to wrestling.
There are cameras everywhere. I'm sure somewhere, you know, some dude's going to hold up his cell phone and record it.
I guess so.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's me. Brad from Whippy. The WWE has pretty much nailed down how they present documentaries, and this one follows that formula to a T. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but when they do break the mold, we got documentaries like CM Punk and Paul Heyman. This was an enjoyable look at the key points of Lawler's career, but I do feel they left out a lot of his Memphis stuff. I would have loved to have heard more about the music integration they did with Jerry recording a hit song, or talk about the empty arena match, which I did watch and enjoyed hearing Lance Russell try to calm Terry Funk down before the match. But they did go in depth with the footage of his heart attack on live TV. It was pretty scary actually watching and hearing it happen. Another quality release, 7 out of 10. I guess the big hiccup when it came to the music integration, which Memphis was famous for, was you would not be able to play any of this music.
They should like replace all the music with the WWE versions.
Yes.
The generic version.
Which did not stop Memphis when we would run it on the Fight Network from playing like everything, Bad to the Bone.
There were some rights things.
Like, we got the rights to it. It's a very... very old school wrestling territorial legal boundaries.
Yeah.
Oh, we're good.
Yeah. Well, we don't air it anymore.
No, we don't.
I don't think so.
Unfortunately, there's some great stuff in that library.
Mm-hmm. We got a Tommy from the UK who says, I thought this was average at best. It wasn't awful, but I don't think it stands up against the other WWE documentaries that have been released as of late. Here are a few things I found noteworthy. The Kaufman section was very good, and it was interesting seeing Vince admit that the company was wrong to turn down Kaufman's initial proposal. I wonder who the WWE would have put him with in a program if his idea had come to fruition.
Oh, 1982, I just don't see that relationship working. It was just...
Who would you put him with?
In 1982, I can't even come up with, like, a great idea of someone you could put him with. Like could you see this guy doing anything with like, a Backlund or...
Let me think about that.
Like, 1982 was very different from 1985.
It wouldn't have been as fun, you know, with Lawler. Like, even if you had... Who was the top heel? Like Sheik, you know. I don't know.
Like I'm trying to think of, you know, that personality that jumps out that would have really clicked with a Kaufman.
Where did Jesse come around?
I mean, at this point, I mean, Jesse by 1982 was
Piper would have been fun.
Yeah, but this also predated Piper in the company. Piper would have jumped out as somebody that it certainly would have worked with. But you also had Piper was a heel at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And
so was Lawler.
Lawler at the time was a baby face right. for the Kaufman right. program at that point. I mean, it was one that you could have shifted Piper. But, I mean, he wasn't in the company at this point in time. It's just funny that, you know, here we are in 2015 and we're on the precipice of Stephen Amell being all over our television this summer on Raw.
Could be the next Andy Kaufman.
Yeah. But it was funny to hear Vince, you know, talk about what really got them was how much publicity they got out of the Letterman deal in their backyard in New York for the Memphis territory. Mm-hmm. Okay, one more here from Ravi in Vancouver. Has the WWE made a documentary that hasn't been great? Short answer, yes. Watching this really made me remember how great the King was during the early 90s and 2000s. I feel the documentary was a bit short. I would have loved to have heard more from Brett and other Hart family members about the Lawler-Hart family feud and also Lawler versus ECW. The Andy Kaufman segment was the best part of the film. I'd love to see a WWE Rivals episode that would look deeper into the feud. The fact that Andy hasn't been put into the Hall of Fame yet is a real head-scratcher. Where would you guys rank Lawler in terms of the greatest color commentators of all time for being someone who started watching in 93, I'd put Lawler as the best to do it solely because there hasn't been very long periods of time where he hasn't been a constant in WWE. Man, what I wouldn't give for one more Lawler JR run. 7 Burger King hats out of 10. I think Lawler in particular from 93 till I'll say around 99 was very effective. And then I thought as he eased more into the babyface role, kind of lost that, that effectiveness as a color commentator. Certainly those would be the years I would point to as his high points.
Yeah. I mean, I loved him as a heel. I thought, you know, like Vince himself talks about, one of the wittiest people. And just even – I remember like that – him being able to use that telestrator thing that, you know, and actually make something funny out of a still frame shot. Things like that I thought he was really brilliant in, but I never considered him the best. You know, I would rank Heenan above him. Just talking about color commentators, I actually really preferred Paul Heyman above Jerry Lawler for the short time that we heard Paul Heyman.
Yeah, he was a completely different dynamic at that point when Lawler was kind of getting stale in that role. I thought Heyman injected a lot of life into that combination with Jim Ross, and they were so different from Ross and Lawler.
I would say like Lawler, you know, was very funny and was a great heel at getting heel reactions. But I think I would say there were probably better color commentators that were able to put over storylines and put over, you know, babyface wrestlers better. Like I think Jesse was better, in my opinion.
All right. Well, there are some of our thoughts on Jerry Lawler, color commentator. And now for real, we are going to say goodbye.
Oh, that was a great show. It was really good.
Did we do the review?
Oh, shit.